This is How Was Your Weekend with Wendy and Brian. Look for updates at facebook.com/weekendpodcast or how.ws/yourweekend. While you're there, please subscribe. There are links for iTunes, Android, and more. Hey, Brian.
Hey, Wendy. How was your weekend?
It was awesome. How was your weekend?
Weekend. I think we can just type it out and
we can,
but I don't want people to think that I'm over as I'm really trying to not stress the
change,
not just the change, but the accent.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
I don't want to slip into something,
but in all honesty, my weekend was very busy, but good.
Yeah. You're moving.
Holy mother of pearl. I'm telling you right now, there's so many boxes. It looks like the U-Haul vomited in my house and none of it's organized and I'm a little overwhelmed, but it's gonna look like amazing come Friday.
Do you need boxes?
No.
Okay.
I think I got enough, but if I need them, I'm gonna come into you.
I've got three. I've got all three.
All three left. Okay. Well, if I come up short, I'm coming to you.
Plus these banker boxes, you could have those.
Those things are amazing. But then what are you going to do when you have to pack your toys back up? Because those are good for your toys.
Hopefully.
You wouldn't have to do that anytime.
Hopefully I'll never have to do that again. If we move out, this will just become a museum.
There you go. Just say, if you're buying this house, you must keep it in the me.
Yeah, give me an extra $25,000 and keep the toys.
And let me visit whenever I want. Visitation rights.
Yeah, I'd probably take $25,000 for all this stuff.
I think you should probably take more than that.
It's worth about that.
Oh, okay.
Actually, no, it's worth more than that.
I was going to say, I don't even know that much, but I'm pretty sure it's more than that.
I'd take $25,000. I would be lucky to ever get anything like that.
You never know. May get an offer just off this podcast.
God, I would have to ship it, though. If you want to come with like a U-Haul and pack it up, I would be fine with that.
So one thing I did do this week before I got to the weekend and started packing, so I was driving back and forth to work and just trying to chill a little bit. We read a book. We listened to a book again.
I love Audible.
Audible is pretty amazing.
tfradio.net/audible.
Yes.
Just saying.
Yes, it is good. I have enjoyed it more. Now, I do have to find that when my mind starts to wander on what they're talking about, that I have to like go back and rewind and re-listen. But it's no different than if I'm reading and my mind wanders and I go, oh, God, I gotta go back a page because I wasn't really taking in what I was reading.
What speed do you read at or listen at?
Oh, God. Normal.
Okay.
You probably put it on like
3X.
No, you don't.
Yeah.
Because you're a genius.
That's,
not
true.
Process that. How do you process it that quickly?
It's easy if you are focused on it or if you're doing something else. I mean,
I'm always doing something else.
I mean, even if you are, but like, you know, can split your attention between things. If you're doing something, if you were coding a database or something that you had to pay active attention to, that's one thing. But if you're driving,
pish. If you're trying not to kill people in heavy machinery.
I mean, are you like running like a thresher or something?
Is no.
If you're driving down the road.
But
you are
in
not
traffic on the highway with maniacs. But it's not about the driving part. It's just my mind wanders on the topic and the thing makes me start being curious in my brain. And then I stop listening because I'm in my head versus paying attention. So my multitasking for comprehension of something else while I'm in my thoughts does not work so well.
I'm telling you, 3X is the way to go.
Okay, well, I'm going to try it on the next one.
Start with 1.5X and work your way up.
Okay, well, it will go by a lot faster.
Yeah, it does.
This one was like 6 hours or so on the...
Did we actually say what it was?
No, we didn't say what it was. What was the book that we listened to?
So you've listened to it. I have listened to it.
Yes.
Stacy.
Yes.
Has
The Girl with the Red Pen.
And Katie is reading it right now.
Okay.
It's The Subtle Art of Not Giving an F by Mark Manson.
Yes, it is.
If you don't like the F-bomb, this is not the book for you.
This is not the yes, because it is used frequently, especially at the beginning.
It's only censored on the cover.
It is. But the use of the word in the context of the story absolutely makes complete sense.
Yeah, but at the same time, the book is not what I expect. I'm sorry, I'm playing with toys here.
Yeah, he's multitasking. I now, just for all of our listeners, I had the epiphany, and I am slow on the uptake, as we just discussed in my ability to multitask, of why the other reasons why Brian loves Transformers. It's because it's like the original fidget toy.
I just grabbed the fidget cube that Stacy got me.
So I was like, oh my gosh, that just dawned on me of why else you love these things is because you can just deconstruct and reconstruct them into their purpose.
Maybe. But yeah, so the name itself though is almost a misnomer.
Yes.
Because it makes you think, and it's intentional. I mean, the title's gimmick. The book is not a gimmick. The title is a gimmick.
Yes.
It's marketing. But the book makes you think that the title makes you think that the book is entirely about just not caring about anything and how that will get you ahead in life.
Yes. And that's not what it is.
The first chapter sort of sets up that it's, you need to learn to not care about everything.
Yes.
And the book teaches you in a directed way how to figure out what to care about.
Yes. I liked how at the end of the day, the short version to me was, don't care or don't give an F about things that don't matter. Like, what are your values? What are important to you? Hone in on those things and care enough about those things, not about all the other superficial craziness that you think is important. Hone in really on you and what is important to you.
I have no idea if the author will ever listen to this. So, I mean, like, when it gets tweeted out or anything.
Yeah.
So, I want to get the two things across. One, I think it's my favorite. And I've read a ton of
Audibles.
Well, yeah. Well, I've read and listened to a ton of, say, self-help, improvement, productivity books.
And that was a hard thing. I didn't know if I really categorized it as a self-help.
I think it is. But I've read a ton. Uh-huh. I mean, dozens and dozens.
Well, because you're like a psychologist. You deep down wish you were a psychologist.
Except I, you know, getting paid and without having to have like a PhD. I've read a lot. I think it's my favorite one that I've ever read.
I have to admit, I have read a few, probably not as much, but I think the way it was, how his point is depicted is very simplistic to the fact and realistic, like actually reachable and realistic.
Yes. And where and why I wanted to preface this next statement with that is because it's going to sound terrible. I don't think he has a single premise, and I don't think that he could have written a book without having a central thesis to cover. So he had a bunch of ideas that he wanted to talk about. So he constructed this not giving an F thesis around all of the individual points that he wanted to hit.
Yes.
And in a way, I think it's kind of artificial, but I don't care because I really, really love the book because it was smart. It was no nonsense.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of things that, you know, are kind of in my wheelhouse, like the skeptical stuff and how people think and remember and perceive things. That stuff is so easy to get wrong. And we'll get into sort of this stuff in a second. But he did not get it wrong. Everything that I was already familiar with, he got right. And that's a big deal.
Yeah. No, I thought it was a great book. And I didn't know what to expect. You just said, hey, there's this great book that a couple of us are listening to, reading, whatever. I think you should listen to it. And then I said, okay, well, then let's do a podcast about it. And based on the title, which I had seen in a bookstore and stuff, I was like, interesting. But my initial perception was, this is totally about not giving a care about anything. And it so was not that. So you described everything perfectly.
I don't remember why I picked it up. Because the title is the kind of title of a book that I would never read.
Yeah.
Because, again, It sounds like it's
gimmicky.
It sounds like a gimmick, and I don't care about gimmicks. But the reviews on it were very positive.
Yes.
And it's not like the reviews were positive, like, this is the number one book that I've got, you know. It's like they were typically thoughtful, typically in English.
Yes.
So, but yeah. So I guess let's maybe talk about the book a little bit.
I think one thing I liked about it a lot, right, is he talked about characters and different people in the book. But what I really appreciated on his take was he would talk about a character or personality type, and then he would turn around and say, well, it's not them always. You have the ability to change how that person reacts. Like, don't enable the personality. He's just like, you choose, right? Basically, yeah. It's your choice how you let that personality affect you, or they continue to affect themselves based on the F's that they give.
You're talking about the responsibility chapter, right?
Yeah, I believe that's what it was, yes.
So one chapter is about, you know...
I love books about self-accountability.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, yeah, things may suck, and something may happen to you, and it's not your fault. Necessarily,
mm-hmm.
but it is your responsibility to fix it or get out of it. You should always take responsibility.
Correct. The only person who can prevent forest fires is you.
Yeah.
Basically.
Or if you're in a forest fire, you need to do something about it.
Correct.
Because you can't guarantee that somebody's going to. If you're in a personal forest fire, you can't expect somebody else to fix your forest fire. You have to, Smokey, you have to put that out yourself.
Yeah. It's that insanity. Sane, right?
Yeah. One thing. So I think it was in that chapter when he was talking. It may have been in an earlier chapter. We were talking about this yesterday, where it's talking about, hey, Max. I hear Max.
Hi, puppy.
We're talking. It's very professional of me, I know. talking about if some people think that the world is out to get them.
Yes.
And I love this because I think we've all known people in our lives like this.
Oh, absolutely.
If you feel that it's always you versus the world, it's probably not the world that screwed up. It's probably you.
Yep. That was a really good, that was a very simplistic way and on point that he described.
So let's see here. I'm trying to think of the themes in the chapter in the book. I should pull it up.
Trust was one. Responsibility.
Trust, responsibility. The responsibility chapter is where I really started to think, you know, I think he's got his head on his shoulders, right?
Yeah, because the first couple, right, to keep you intrigued and have people interested, he just kind of talks about all these crazy, probably not the right term, but these really what seem like outlandish things going on in his behavior that kind of brought him to this point, and people he did that he was associated with or that created this behavior in him. And so that was probably like the first three or four chapters to really get you into all these different personality types and all these values and worries and whatever you want to label it. And then he gets to the responsibility piece.
Yeah, after responsibility, I guess he talks about maybe, I don't even know what chapter it was in, of course, because I wasn't reading it. I was listening to it.
Yeah.
But he started talking about maybe caring too much and enjoying life and getting fulfillment out of your life.
Yes.
So the book ended on a really nice note. But let me. I
guess, yeah, that closing story was great.
I want to backtrack a bit just for a second. In probably the first or second chapter, he was talking about you have to actually figure out what you want to give an F about.
So here's one of the lines, right? There are only so many things we can give an F about, so we need to figure out which ones really matter.
Exactly. And for me, I've always worried about what people think.
Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people do.
I've always worried about maybe how things look.
Mm-hmm.
I would obsess over if I thought somebody didn't like me, or if somebody had the wrong perception of me because of something they'd heard or whatever. I mean, that would really bother me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think naturally as you get older, a lot of that stuff bothers you less.
Yes,
but,
I agree.
But I think it's helped me. But the thing that I loved, because I've reasoned this out as well, and I don't think it takes a rocket scientist to figure this out, but like old people, like an old person, you go to the grocery store and your 3-cent coupon doesn't work.
Yes.
And you pitch a fit.
Yes.
And he said that happens because those people don't have much in their lives to give an F about, so they give an F about
everything, every little thing.
Every little thing.
Yeah.
So if you have more in your life, if you have a richer life to live, naturally you should give an F about
less.
Fewer things.
Yeah. And he also turns it to, and you kind of alluded to that too, is you giving a care about so many things, which the line used to be, and I don't know who came up with it, but I've heard it a million times too, is worrying about the things that haven't happened. Generally, those things never happen. And so it's wasted energy and you've lost the presence of where you're at right now because you're worried about what's not happening versus being in what is happening.
Do you, I don't know if this is something that I do or something that is even normal or natural, but do you think in terms of calculated risk?
Yes.
Like I
think, probably not to the degree that you do, but and I've gotten less of that as I've gotten older and in a more content space, I think.
I'm not much of a long-term planner. I'm much very much somebody who lives in the instant instance.
Yeah.
But I often think in terms of, well, if I turn left here in front of this vehicle, from the distance they're at, there's very minimal chance that they'll hit me. So I tend to, I make statistical or probabilistic calculations in my head before I do just about any little thing like that.
In a day-to-day basis. I'm not in the moment that much.
I am very much risk averse when it comes to long-term things.
Okay.
But when it comes to short-term things, I am very much not risk averse.
I don't know. I think it just depends on where I'm at. I would say I'm definitely a planner. I think long term, and you intended to too much. I always, what if, so wouldn't do something now because of where, what could have happened 6 months, a year, 5 years, and it was not that big of a deal. So I did forego a lot of being in the moment or experiencing something because what could it imply in the future, or what perception could be had of me for a future purpose that may, and half of that's probably, it doesn't even exist anymore. I was way worse about that when I was younger. And especially this year, I'm just like, why not? Just do everything for the most part. But I still am aware and thoughtful, but I'm not as calculated as you are.
So, yeah, I don't want to go too far on a tangent, so yeah. I'm going to save the audience my next
rant,
my next odyssey into Brian's psyche. But if I found that if I worry and obsess about too many things, obsessing is about detail and getting things done and getting things done right the way I want it. But I you only have so much energy or so many Fs that if I focus on too many things, that I end up missing things and skipping things and forgetting things. It's not even that my life is that stressful, because that's kind of the way that my brain works anyway.
Yeah.
But if I try to focus on too many things, I don't do those things as well as I would like.
But that's awesome. And it also goes back to the accountability piece, right? Because we all have people in our life, and I have a few who worry about give an F or worry about everything. And the energy they suck out of other people because of it can be really interesting, but sad to watch.
I can see that.
It's like every little thing. It's like, and it says they're older, right? It's literally that example of their 3 cent coupon or whatever. But they're in everybody else's business because they don't have enough going on in their own life or fulfilling enough to forego all that worry and making up things that could happen that you don't even think about. And then all of a sudden they're rambling about it and you're going, oh my God. And it's like, wait, no, that's insane. That no, not worrying about that because the probability is very, but there, where do you hit in the threshold where it's like, okay, you don't even realize the probability of what you're worrying about, the energy you're expending on it, and the others you're drawing into it is such a time suck and exhausting that hopefully you have that person that's like, dude, stop worrying about every little thing. And even if you're doing it, I get it, but don't drag everybody else into the worry wheel.
So from working with me and knowing me, mm-hmm. in the context that you have over the last few years, mm-hmm. do I come across as somebody who's always worrying about something?
No. I would
think that I wouldn't.
I don't think that you do at all. I would say I interpreted what I maybe now would say was worry as you questioning other people to calm your worries. So we often worked really well because we gave an F about different things when we were working on projects, right? I would be like, Kili, that's too deep. Or no, how does that come back to here? And whether it was a worry or your curiosity, I always chalked it up to curiosity, but now I wonder if part of it was worry on top of curiosity.
Yeah, I mean, like, I think, though, when it comes to worrying, though, I think in terms of, like I said, like a statistical chance that I'm willing to take at something. And if I'm willing to, if I commit to it, I'm not worried about it. I just do it and I'm willing to live with the consequences.
Yeah.
But I do obsess over things a lot.
Yeah.
But also at the same time, I think a lot of people would say, just from working with me, that I almost come across like I don't care and I don't have any worry at all.
Yeah.
And I approach things from a very, you know, very stress-free, devil may care way.
I wouldn't have said you didn't care or that you were stress-free. I just saw you had very distinct things that you cared about or that you would give more emphasis and time and conversation to than other things that maybe I thought were more important and or were you moving past it more quickly and delivering on whatever it was. That was few and far between, but now that you did such a great job asking a question and I'm thinking back, I always chalked it up to curiosity. And now I can see in some cases where it was worry. I only knew that it was worry if you came into my cube a certain way. Your body language changed and I knew you would worry.
It's more angry than worry.
Yes.
It's like, damn it, Wendy, I don't know what's going on. But I think that I've done a pretty good job of figuring out what ifs I want to give, but I think that I could have done better.
Yep.
I feel that I probably, again, focus too much on maybe what somebody else thinks. I know I have. I mean, yep. No, we both know that I have.
Well, we all do. To some degree.
But whether it's intentional or just a byproduct of the way things turned out, I think that my attitude in respect to things like that, I hardly give an F.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the older I get, and we talked about that, but I feel like the more situations that come up or I watch other people go through, I'm getting better. I've always had my values and things that I care about, that I give an F about. And in that, I think that list gets shorter the older I get and the bigger situations that I go through in my life, because through all that, you start to see what the constants are that are good for you, that are keep you balanced, to make you happy. The tried and true things that continue to bring you what you hope for, whether it's professional success or personal success or however you want to define it. But I would say, especially probably in the last 5 years, that bucket of F's is getting very refined and very consistent compared to what it once was.
So thinking in terms of things to give an F about, mm-hmm. you mentioned values.
Yep.
For most people, values are core to who they are, mm-hmm. or at some point they develop them and they don't change that often. I would say that my values are negotiable.
Yes.
And what I mean by that is...
That sounds very cheap, Kilby.
No, negotiables.
Your values have a price.
No, it's not negotiable by that.
Okay.
I may hold something very near and dear to me that this is important.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can show me through logic or math
why it's not.
Yeah, why it's not, I'm willing to let it go.
Okay. I can see that. And I would say that your values continue to evolve and change too. Like things, I mean, that just happens. You're going to gain some, you're going to lose some. You learn or experience and or have facts depending on how you process and kick things in and out of the bucket, out of the you know what bucket. but I don't. I think everybody's, if they're being completely honest, everybody's values are negotiable.
I don't know. I think so. I think it's one of the hardest things.
I think there are some that are completely unnegotiable, yes. But they can't say every single one of theirs is not negotiable because something could happen, but maybe not. I mean, that's a small percentage, I would assume.
Yeah. So I guess we're very much, we haven't deviated from what the book is about, but I think we're sort of talking in terms of, or I am at the very least, of how I try to integrate the concept and how I realize that what he's talked about, I either have embodied or I have not embodied.
Yeah.
And I think when it comes to the things that don't matter, I think that I have done a very poor job of not giving an F. But I think when it comes to the things that do matter, I've done a pretty good job
of giving an F.
Of giving an F where it's needed. So again, because I think I tend to give too, I've in the past tended to give too much of an F.
Yeah. I do that too. I give a care about a lot of things, about a lot of people. But I think you do change. And I think, you accept, I think part of that too. And I think he did talk about that maybe a little bit. I don't know if it was a full chapter, just a reference to it, but basically accepting those things, like accepting the controllables, like control the controllables versus putting value and worry and all of that around things that you cannot control. And the best thing was at the end of it, right? And I don't know if we want to jump all the way to that. Maybe we should wait. But
I mean, go ahead.
So at the end of the day, right, he's like, the inevitable is you're going to die.
Yes, I think about that a lot.
Yeah, so and that was the part, I mean, the last, I don't know, two chapters was just where, like, so much greatness. There was so much greatness in the whole book, but the last two chapters is like, oh gosh, this dude's getting for real, and you can't argue his point, and it is exactly correct, which is we worry about things and run or chase or do whatever to fulfill the moment or this future that we think is going to happen. But at the end of the day, we all know that we're going to die. So knowing that, how are you choosing to spend your energy, what to worry about, and put your time and attention into? Because that is the one consistency through this whole thing that he's talking about that is fact, and you are not going to worry away. So if you just accept that, does that change what you worry about, what you care about, all that other kind of stuff, as opposed to people insert worry or giving an F about nonsensical things in a way to avoid that inevitable thing?
Yeah, so I think as we get older, our perception of time tends to a year doesn't seem to take as long as it used to take.
Gosh, no.
And as a corollary to that, I think the value that we apply to other things tends to drop accordingly.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the value of other things tends to increase. So they're like the mental calculation that I do before, like, making a risky turn, like the denominator changes or the numerator changes depending on how you want to measure it. Either,
I'm not good at math. Just remember this.
So basically how I weight in my head as far as doing things, not intentionally. It's not like I'm consciously making the effort. Oh, you know, I'm 38 years old. Given my current health, my life expectancy is XXX, you know, whatever. But as you get older, I think you tend to value yourself less and the world and what you leave behind more.
So, that was the other part. What is it going to be like? What am I leaving behind?
Exactly. So, in my weird, obsessive, compulsive way of figuring out the risk of doing something, and I'm not saying that I'm going to pull out in front of a car when I'm 75 years old, I'm going to give, like, no room for anybody to pull out in front of me. It's not what I'm saying. But I do, like, you know, like, there's mental math. Like, how fast are they approaching? Whatever. Is it worth me doing it? Sometimes it's very clearly obvious that there's room. Sometimes there's not.
Mm-hmm.
But as you get older, you tend to value things differently.
Yes.
And I think for most people, they value themselves less. I think most people do. Not everybody. Certain people want.
Well, I think, right? It does. It depends on what you have in your life. If you're a parent, you're probably not going to value yourself less knowing that you are leaving behind children. Or if you're a caregiver for somebody and the repercussions of a certain decision leaves them in a bad place. But I agree, all in all, if all the other parts of what you care about seem to be in a safe place and good, then you're probably giving less and less, and you've probably put all the worry and work into getting it there however you need to. But I agree with that statement, basically.
Yeah.
Now that I processed out loud. Sorry.
No, it's
so sorry.
But I don't actually know where I'm going with that, but I think that it's just interesting that, again, like, what are you leaving behind?
So we got all into the deep stuff at the end before we probably should have.
I want to mention the one thing you need to mention it though. My favorite bit from the entire book.
Well, so there, my favorite bits of the book were some of these characters that he talked about, these people he experienced. And the one that just stuck out to me, and I think we all know people that have commonalities to this character, in the full spectrum or in some spectrum of it, but the lady that he met at a self-help seminar, right? And then she became such a self-help junkie that she embraced so much of it that became her,
who she was.
Yeah. And she was like, she was basically giving him ultimatums to be her boyfriend, and then trashing him on his blog. And it was just a whole other level of, I can't relate. And I don't know how self-help led her to this path of giving a care so much about herself.
She cared about everything.
Yeah, everything. And over exaggerated anything that she learned about self-help, I think.
Yeah, so I listened,
like, curing cats' kidney stones
with her mind. I laughed out loud. I love that. And the thing is, I mean, apparently that was, I can't imagine,
but she cared.
So this was somebody, again, he'd hooked up with at a conference.
Yep.
And that was, I think, in 2008, he said.
Oh, I don't remember the year, but
2015, she flew, I guess, was it California, or it was somewhere on the West Coast where he was? I think it was California.
She was in California. He was somewhere else.
Oh, yes, I
think.
But she flew across country to tell him and his fiance, who was with him at the time, and his now wife, why they were meant to be together forever.
Yes.
That's taking it too far.
It was an interesting, and then so there was that character. Then there was the character that you referenced before, which was, if you think the world's against you, then everybody's against you, and the world's always against you, that it's probably you, it's not the world. And there was the guy that he referenced in that, if I remember correctly, was always had to be the smartest, most talented, worried about all sorts of things, in an act of his paranoia. So that was an interesting story. And then I think the other pretty profound, I don't know if it's profound, but the other thing that he talked about, right? He talked about his childhood, family going through a divorce, talked about how he, when he went to school, his behavior in his early 20s, how he basically lived not giving a care about anything because there was never enough of anything.
Oh, like, I forgot about that.
Yeah, right?
And when his friend passed.
Yeah, so he, at 19, had a friend pass away in a tragic accident that he was at, and how he said it took the thing that he cared the most about, and he got the depressed about, to actually start living and caring about the right things. Did I state that right? Was that...
You did. And
kind of the context of that?
And I hate to put it this way, but I listened to that.
He said it took somebody dying for him to learn how to live, basically.
And I'm like, huh. I was 2 years or so, 3 years or so, whatever it was, older than he was at that point.
Yeah.
And I lost my brother. Then I lost then 10 months later, my dad. Then like 6 months later, my mom.
I know. I totally thought of you when he was saying this. I was hoping you had something to say.
And I thought, I didn't have a spiritual awakening from that. I mean, maybe I did, and that life is very fragile. But at the same time, losing my parents and my one brother, it's also like, hey, if I die, I'm dead.
Yeah.
It's like my value of my own life, how I perceive it to me, it's like, well, they're gone, so if I'm gone, it's going to be no big deal. Ultimately, it's going to suck short term, but people will get over it.
Yeah. But they won't. They'll still be sad.
I know, but it sort of had like the almost the opposite effect for me. Now, I'm not suicidal. I'm not.
No, but you experienced so much in such a short period of time.
Yeah, it did not have the same impact or the same. I didn't draw the same lessons from it that he did.
Well, and I think for you, you saw it coming. Where this was a unexpected, well, not that that changes it, but
you know, you would think that I saw it coming, but I was very dull. And it's one of those things. It's you've seen the cartoon of the dog sitting there, and his house is on fire, and he's like, everything is fine.
Yes,
that was me.
Yes,
I had no concept that
the world was maybe falling apart a little bit.
That the train was going to stop. That the world was falling apart.
Yeah,
I thought that's the life I knew, and it's just that's the way that the world worked, and it was going to be that way forever. No, it wasn't.
Well, and so that you just said a really great thing, because then he talks about also. So there's that reference, but then before he gets to that story, which is like in the middle of the book, really. He starts out with how he got his heart broke. And
yes. And
that's when he was like a turning point for him, because at the time it was like the worst thing that had happened to him, and he cared so much. And then once he moved past that breakup, met somebody else, it was his first girlfriend or whatever, and how he realized that it kind of leads into the responsibility piece, but also when you're in it, and you're in it so much and so consistently, you don't recognize, because you're not honest with yourself, or that person's not honest with you, vice versa, that it's not good, that it's not healthy. And he talks about having, right, the people around you who are going to be like, you're an enabler, stop. Or, no, dude, your values are all out of whack and you're spending a lot of energy and hurting yourself. And he goes, you know, you need those people who are like, I'm telling you because I care. But I think your stuff's all out of whack, and you need to take responsibility for this part. I'll take responsibility for this part as your friend. And I thought that was interesting too, but it goes back to what you just said, is when you're in it for so long, or that's all you know, and you have nothing else to relate it to, or nobody else helping you see a different perspective, it doesn't, that emotional F doesn't really show up, you know? So... it's a really great book. I think he does some very simple things that don't, like a lot of self-help books seem impossible, or seem like you have to be so disciplined and so, you know, on this track of to get better. And he just puts out these concepts and everything where it's like, that's just so logical.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot in here that you had. Actually, that's a fantastic point. So like usually... like a self-help book or whatever, it requires a lot of work. So an example, Harry Lorraine's, he was the one of the memory gurus that could teach you how to remember anything.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically all through association. He would have a system that you could learn. You could literally learn anything or memorize anything. But it required so much effort,
mm-hmm.
and so much practice. And just so much dedication that it wasn't worth doing. There's nothing like that in this book.
No, his is basically, here's the things to be aware of. Here's how you can fix that and make it better. It's just, at the end of the day, being aware and making good choice, making choices that are important to you. Like,
yeah.
I feel like that's the simplest way of putting it.
Yeah.
The Subtle Art of Not Giving an F by Mark Manson.
Yeah, it's a great book.
Yes. I really did enjoy it, because I wasn't sure what to expect from it. And as much as you could say, hey, this sounds like that's not real earth-shattering, it's the stories that he uses and the parallels that anybody can draw to their own life that they're going to get something out of this, and I think feel better about reading it instead of feeling worse about themselves.
Yeah, shameless plug, I'm going to have a link to the Amazon page to buy this, and it'll help pay for the show.
Yes, and I think everybody should get it. It honestly is worth this. I think I only took two and a half days to actually listen to it, where others would take me longer. So yeah, definitely go to Amazon and get it.
Sweet.
The link that Kilby's gonna post.
Yes.
So
next podcast.
Yes.
You will be recording it from your new condo.
I will be. This is gonna be a fun experiment, since I am technically challenged, as we know, but I think I've got this down.
You're not that bad.
Think we've got this down, and Kilby can attest. I'm so excited about having my own mic and feeling like legit.
I'm sending you along your way with a box full of audio equipment.
So I'm feeling a little legit here. So the next one will be live broadcasting from.
Are we going to do video?
We're going to try the video.
Wow.
I think that way we can just give it a shot. Why not? Go all in for this one, and then we will be broadcasting from Nashville and Mooresville.
Yeah.
Get it.
It's going to be pretty awesome.
It's going to be awesome. All right, Kilby. Well, this was a great suggestion. I'm so glad you recommended it.
The next book you need to go through is The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat.
Okay. I'm going to try that one, but I think we are going to check out Quiet, too, in the interim.
Yes.
We've got some fun topics coming up, so stay with us. Talk to you later.
See ya.
Bye. This was How Was Your Weekend with Wendy and Brian. Please subscribe at our website, howwas.yourweekend. That's howw.as/yourweekend. Please leave a review and tell a friend.